Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Yeah, rides in lots of exotica today, let me tell you. Now, Peter Hitchener, he's missing in action. In fact, he's been, kidnapped by the network heavies from Channel 9. And currently, as we speak, I believe he's walking down a street with a kind of a purposeful look on his face and doing those kind of head turns, almost reminiscent of Zoolander. So these are going to be played before and after the news. I love being able to give him grief when he's not here to defend himself. What we are going to do, however, is look back at some of the best bits of 2018, and there has been a lot of them, and some exotica to get around in today. We're going to talk the latest edition of the Maserati Quattroporte, but first, we'll hear about the first ever BMW X2.
How good is that indeed? We're actually calling it a sports activity coupe.
That says it all.
A sack.
That says it all. A sports activity coupe. Well
it is
said.
All about style.
It is.
Of course it is.
Four doors, that's fine. Still a coupe.
Beautiful car, but a beautiful, beautiful profile silhouette. Walking in the footsteps of the X4 and the X6, and we know how successful those vehicles have been.
Yes, correct.
So it would be fair to assume that if it's got an X and it's got an even number, it's going to have a swoopy back.
That's pretty much it. Mm. Exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah, great.
That's
okay.
Perfect. So it's the style version of the of its predecessor.
Okay. Now the X1 on which it's based. I remember when I drove that, I was gobsmacked at how much interior space was there for such a small footprint. Does the X2 sort of mirror that?
It really does. And one of the things I think that people think about when you look at a coupe, you say, oh, you've got the swooping back, you're going to lose a lot of luggage space, but you really don't lose much at all, about 35 litres less in the X2 than in the X1. So we're really happy about that.
Yeah, just a few cartons of milk less. It doesn't really matter
basically.
All that much.
No.
Now, under the bonnet, I'd imagine we'll see an array of 2-litre turbo 4s and 2-litre turbo diesels.
Look, we are talking at the moment about our S-Drive, which is the front-wheel drive 2-litre that we're going to start with, and that's a petrol. That's going to be coming in March, but we will be welcoming some other variants later on in the year as well. We're really excited to get this vehicle in March because that's the same time as the world launch, so we're pretty stoked about that.
And model grades, I suppose there'll be the entry level and then sport and...
Well, one of the things we're seeing all of the time is that these packages are becoming standard on our vehicles. So, really, really good-looking and stylish exterior packages, but with all of the trim and specifications inside too.
Yeah, lovely. Now, we did hear a little earlier in the show an M4 wailing. It was like a 3-litre twin turbo, sounding amazing. But, of course, that's an engine that's fairly common throughout the BMW range, not quite in that higher state of tune, but that 3-litre turbo is found in, the M140i and the 340i. Any chance it's going to make it into an X2?
Look, given the fact that, we're certainly looking at performance variants of the X3, given the fact that we love performance cars at BMW, and here in Australia we love them too, I think that there's no doubt whatsoever that you'll be seeing something coming through, but it may not be for a little while. But,
gotcha.
Look, this launch of this vehicle is imminent. I'm actually off to Portugal tonight to have a look at one of these vehicles.
Oh, hey, settle down. Off to Portugal. Cut it out. You're lucky thing. Here
Very excited to see how these cars are looking and driving in the flesh. It's going to be great.
Here are we chained to the desk and you're swatting off to Portugal. But I know these things
tend to be done.
But they are hard work, actually, when you're away because you've got a lot of things to do. And
yeah. Well, you actually only go for 2 or 3 nights, Peter.
Oh, no.
It's a bit of a flying visit in and out to have a look and get all of the information from all of the experts. It'll be great.
Oh, it will be wonderful. Now, one quick question. How do you deal with jet lag?
I actually don't think I get it anymore.
You're lucky.
She drinks enough wine to kind of...
No, sorry. No, she doesn't.
I can't remember. It's just a blur.
Well, of course not.
I hope you have a wonderful time, though. How exciting off to Portugal.
Oh, no.
Terrific.
Well, let you go and get packed up. Before you go, though, I believe you might have a bit of an inside scoop as to how much we might need to fork out for one of these X2s.
Well, we've just announced the pricing of our S-Drive 20i, and that is going to be around $56,000. So it's certainly an accessible vehicle
and there's
very little premium over the X1. So you can have your... practical and capable X1, or you can have your stylish and sporty X2.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Lenore's definitely an X2 type of girl, isn't she?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
As always, it's great to talk to you, Lenore. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for your time.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Chief Executive Officer of Maserati Australia, Glenn Seely. Welcome back to Behind the Wheel.
It's good to talk to you, Glenn. You must be excited about this new arrival. Mind you, there's so much product coming your way lately. This is just the latest of many.
Look, like all good European manufacturers, we have a great start to the year with the fashion side of business, and certainly Quattroporte leads our fashion stakes. It's one of the best-looking cars in the market.
Absolutely. I remember when I first saw one years and years ago at the motor show in Melbourne when we used to have one.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that thing looks amazing. Mm. And I imagine has just gone from strength to strength since then.
Look, it really has, and the design of this car has terrific longevity. As you say at the start, it looks as modern as it ever has.
Hmm.
It sounds absolutely fantastic. But really what it is something that's completely unique in the segment. It's not everyday transport, and it's not for everyone. It's exclusive. It's the pinnacle of our brand. But you've got something that looks good, that sounds great, and not everyone can own.
That's right. I must say the sound of them. Oh, I love it.
Well, that's it. In fact, you know, with that Ferrari sourced engine under the bonnet, I know you've got the big 375 kilowatt V8, but there are other options. You don't have to have the big stonking V8 if you want a Quattroporte.
No, I mean, we actually do have a diesel in the range, although, to be honest with you, that's not the most popular in the range. But the Ferrari-derived, Maserati-designed petrol engines are certainly what's preferred in this vehicle with the... and they start at 215,000 with the 350 horsepower car. And again, it sounds great, goes really well. Most of the reviews we've read on this engine are really superb. But the real shining light in 2018 is the upgrade in power of the S. So the S now goes up to 430 horsepower and also gets a boost in torque. We move to electric steering, so that allows us to bring in some of the more interventionalist safety controls like highway assist and active lane keeping assist and active blind spot and traffic sign recognition and the like. So we've brought some technology into the car. We've given it a nip and tuck, and we've given it a little bit more power. So it's really coming into its stride now.
That's fantastic. And, of course, those active safety features are just so important and becoming more and more so as our traffic networks clog up and so on. It's just good to be able to know that you're going to stay safe and yet you're driving one of the greatest cars you could.
Look, like all Maseratis, the pilot or the driver is still the centre of, or the protagonist of the drama, if you like, to use some drama language. But in saying that, these mechanisms, they're only there to assist you. You must have your hands on the wheel and you must still enjoy the drive. But what it does do is it tries to cater for the more mundane trips, I guess, or mundane uses of the car, so that when you do get a chance and you do get a squirt down a beautiful, windy track, you get to enjoy the car and you get to hear that sonorous V8 or Ferrari-derived twin turbo 6.
Fantastic.
So in your role as CEO, do you at night time you think, now, what am I going to take home tonight? I think it might just be the Quattroporte AS. I think that'll do it.
I must admit, that is one of the perks of the job, and it really does depend on the day. Some days, you know, you can have a tough day, and to be honest, there's nothing better than getting into a Grand Cabriolet, putting the top down and going over the Harbour Bridge.
Oh.
It really lightens the mood and puts you in a better place when you get home.
You have a different perspective, doesn't it? Yeah. Fantastic. Now, the model year 18 Quattroporte on sale now at your local Maserati dealer. And I noticed a few more Maserati dealers around the place. How's the Levante going? I imagine that's kind of piqued interest in the brand.
Yes, it has. I mean, we've had a very successful run with Levante in 2017. We never actually, in all our aspirations for Levante, it was always still going to be a very exclusive product within the segment. We are a brand where we aren't going to be seen on every street corner. That said, Levante has afforded the brand a 50% growth last year. So It has been extremely successful for us. But that car has been available in diesel, but right now we've just launched the, we've put the Ferrari-derived engine that is in the Levante, in the Quattroporte S, into the Levante. So we now have a twin-turbo petrol burbling under the bonnet of the Levante.
Goes 321 like kilowatts. Thank you very much. Very nice indeed. Well, Glenn, as always, it's great to... Well, last after Maserati's with you. Enjoy that Quattroporte on the way home tonight, if that's what you choose. But look, it's a sunny day. Take the Grand Cabrio. Go on, do it.
You know, I just might.
Glenn Silly, CEO of Maserati. Good to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, gentlemen.
The ideal family vehicle has seven seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180 kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With seven seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel, where motoring starts.
Yeah, still lots to get through on this special edition of Behind the Wheel, where we take a look back at some of the best bits of 2018. And yeah, okay, it's only mid-April, but there's been a lot of fantastic cars released and even some marine craft. Yeah, I know it's behind the wheel, not behind the tiller, but Lexus have launched a yacht. That's right, a Lexus yacht. Just sounds mad. We're going to hear about that later in the show. Take you driving too in the Kia Stinger. We're going to hear about, I think, probably the biggest surprise for me out of 2018. It comes from China. It's enormous. It's called a Havel H9, and it's unbelievably capable. And wait till you hear the price of this car that's essentially the size of a Land Cruiser. It's nuts. The car in question is from Havel. It's called the H9, and to tell us a bit more about it, but it's one of the big honchos from Havel, it's Tim Smith. G'day, Tim. How you going, man?
G'day, Chris. How are you?
Good to talk to you, Tim. So the H9, the latest addition to the Havel lineup. Tell us about it.
Oh, look, it's our flagship product. It's a 7-seat SUV with a full all-terrain system, ladder frame chassis, and just a fabulous car.
Yeah, so this is the kind of car that's going to go up against the likes of, you know, your Ford Everest, your Toyota Fortuner, the Prado even, the Holden Trailblazer, the Isuzu Mux. But the thing is, Pete...
The price.
We've really tried to provide a package that is really amazing, with plenty of features over and above our competitors, but with a price that really does provide a real point of difference for consumers.
Yeah, well, look, we're looking at, well, the one we're driving is the H9 Ultra Lux Auto, and this thing is priced, get this, $44,990. And this is a car that has heated, cooled seats that even give you a massage.
Yeah, massage seats, heated and ventilated. Really, it's a full panoramic sunroof, all from just $44,990.
And the good thing is that despite the size of this, because it's not a small car by any means,
big one, yeah, absolutely.
It's still relatively frugal at 10.9 litres per 100 kilometres. Pretty good.
Yeah, look, the engineers have done a great job of giving us a more powerful engine, giving us, from the old model, 10%. More torque and 10% more kilowatts or power. But the great news is that our fuel economy has gone down 10%. So it's a double sale.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, hooked up to that great gearbox that you'd find, say, in the brand new 3 Series BMW from ZF, the 8-speed.
Yeah, that's what makes the car, I believe, the 8-speed gearbox is super smooth. It gives you a really good linear torque curve, and for those people not so au fait with that sort of language.
What a torque curve is, yeah.
Oh, cut it out. Stop being technical with this, will you?
Sorry. It really does create, when you take off from the lights, and that's what a lot of people judge transmission and a car performance. When you take off from the lights, it really does make a huge difference in the way you get to 60 and then therefore 100.
Yeah. The one opportunity we won't have while we've got this car in the behind the wheel garage is to take it off road. A fair bit of research and development gone into making sure that it does perform and kind of keeps up with its competitors when you hit the off the beaten track.
Yeah, that's probably what sets this car apart, is that not only is it a great family vehicle for everything from your shopping trip or taking the kids to school, but you can get off-road with this and get away with this car. The off-road performance of the vehicle arguably is in the top 5% of cars in Australia who make similar cars. The engineers and the company have done a really great job at providing a set of technology and package that takes this car to the next level in terms of off-road performance.
Yeah, I believe our mates over at 4x4 magazine gave you a bit of a gong last year too.
Yeah, look, the great news is that we made the finals the first year we launched this car in 2015. Once again, we made the finals again, and against some pretty stiff opposition, we knocked some of the major competitors out of the finals. So really, we finished a very respectable position, and they were very impressed at the level of features and package versus the off-road and non-road performance.
Yeah, I think you might have really upset some people. I'd be watching you back. Just be careful as you sort of leave and enter the house. Just make sure there's no sort of strange cars following you.
I check every now and then. There's no black cars following.
Excellent. That's good to hear. So Havel is a brand that is relatively new to the Australian market. We're starting to see them on the roads. But, of course, they come from people who are extremely experienced in making SUVs because they're made in China by a very large corporation.
Yeah, Havel and Great Wall Motors corporations, and a lot of Australians would know who Great Wall is. They've done an amazing, and it's very hard for... I would say not just Australians, but Western people to understand, but the amount of growth that this company has endured or performed in the last 2 to 3 years, a massive investment in research and development and manufacturing facilities has really set the platform to take this brand to international markets. And Australia is one of those first international markets that we've approached with a view to getting Australians into the brand and then giving them the features and benefits that that Australians really need. And the H9 is part of that process.
Excellent. Lots ahead for Havel. We're out of time now because we want to take everyone for a spin around the block in the new H9. But Tim, come back, tell us at a later stage about the electrification that we're going to see from Havel, because I believe there's a lot of stuff on the cards there and a whole lot more to learn about you guys. Good luck. We're going to go out and hit the road now. It's only the asphalt, but hey, people will get a sense of it.
We'll give it a go.
Tim, good to have your time on Behind the Wheel today, man. Thanks. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Peter.
Good on you, Tim.
Well, here we are inside the cabin of the Havel H9. Have a listen to how the doors sound when they're closed. Ooh.
Have a listen to this one. Like, that's a proper thunk.
That's a proper thunk. Sounds very European, very quality. And in fact, inside the cabin, of course, the outside looks terrific.
I'm interested with the styling because you look at it and some angles, from the side, for example, you'd swear it was a Toyota Prado.
Exactly.
And then from other angles, it's kind of got another look to the face. I'm not quite sure which. The design of the face of it, though, is, when you're up close, I think is really good. It's kind of when you give it a bit of distance, it kind of has a bit of an unusual look about it.
Yes. I know you said that. I haven't actually noticed that. I like it from pretty much any angle. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's quite sizable, isn't it?
It's absolutely enormous. Like, it's a proper full-size 7-seat SUV. Like, I mean, you turn around, it just goes forever.
It does.
And as we heard Tim talk about that panoramic sunroof, look at the size of it. It's enormous, and it opens right up.
It certainly does. It's terrific, and it's an all-terrain vehicle. So if you think, look, I don't care what anyone says. I'm going to go up the side of Mount Kosciuszko. You try and stop me.
Well, that's
it'll probably get you there.
Well, exactly. And look, you can see how the shift function, it's very reminiscent of something you might find in a Land Rover.
It is.
With its nice little sand and snow and mud and rot functions or little icons. And it's just a matter of sort of spinning that dial to choose exactly what you want. Does the interior remind you of anything? The layout of this kind of dashboard and the way it's kind of put together?
Well, I was thinking Jeep, I must say. The last time you were test driving a Jeep, when I jumped in it, I thought, this is very stylish.
Mm.
Here it is again.
I wonder if they've done a deal with Chrysler. Because even the T-bar auto, the handle for the gear shift, it feels identical to what you get in a Chrysler. I don't know, maybe they've done a deal. It doesn't actually really matter because it works really well.
Oh, yes.
And it's the quality. Like, I mean, these are all soft-touch plastics. And
that's
look
nice.
At your... Even the fake wood doesn't look quite as fake as it should.
Exactly. Well said. How does it go when we start her up?
Well, it's a pretty quiet effect.
Oh, and look at that. No diesel clatter, which is kind of what you expect in a car like this, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's just quiet and very civilized sounding. It's lovely. And this together with the beautiful cabin and so on makes it a very pleasant experience. Now the motor, it's not the biggest motor for a car of this size.
2-litre turbocharged four-cylinder, which you wouldn't think would be up to the task, but in fact, actually really is. 180 kilowatts, 350 newton metres. Of course, as we were discussing with Tim just before, that great 8-speed gearbox that you find in modern-day BMWs really does give it that sort of sense of polish. And listen to how quiet it is on the road.
It's beautiful. The ride is wonderful.
And you can hear the gearbox being put in manual mode by someone without realising they're doing it. So... It revs nicely too.
The joys of motoring. You're doing a marvellous job with it. And so are the people at Havel, because it's a terrific car. 7 seats and economical to drive. 10.9 litres per 100 kilometres.
Which is incredible for
incredible.
A car of this size.
Yep.
And look, you know, there are a couple of little foibles here and there, as we've suggested. But, you know, when you look at the money that this car's asking, and then you have a look at, for example, a similarly optioned or spec'd Toyota Prado, for the Toyota, you'd be knocking on the door of $90,000.
You would, probably.
This is half the price.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Hey,
you really would. You've got to have it on your shopping list. You've got to give it a look, because I think it's more refined and more polished than, say, your Holden Trailblazer or the Isuzu Mux. It certainly feels like a more luxurious car.
Oh, it does.
We know our mates over at 4x4 magazine have tested it off-road, and they've given it a thumbs up. They say it's capable, it'll do the job. It's got the 5-year warranty, and it's $44,990. It's such great value for money.
It certainly is.
Headlights are so much better than they used to be. But there is one downside to today's plastic headlight lenses. They go all cloudy, dull, and sometimes even an off-yellow colour. Not only does this bring down the look of your car, these less than perfect lenses aren't giving you the beam strength and clarity that your headlights were designed to. There is a simple fix, however, and it doesn't involve getting new headlights. It's the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit. It's really simple to use, it works great, and clear headlights are just a few minutes away. Search for the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit in the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au. For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yes, this is Behind the Wheel. Special edition this week, only because Peter Hitchin has taken off. He tells me he's recording network promos. So, you know, kind of that, I suppose, Ron Burgundy look thing that he does without the moustache. I love giving him grief. But I suspect he's probably more likely sitting in a McDonald's drive-thru somewhere ordering soft-serve ice creams. Anyway, regardless, we're without him. So what I thought we'd do is have a look back at some of the better bits of 2018, and there's been quite a few. We're going to take you around the block in a few short moments in, I reckon, the performance car of the year and last year combined. It is just a cracker. I forgot how good it was after driving it at launch, had it again and went, yep, you know what, this thing is the real deal. It comes from South Korea, built by Kia. It is the Stinger. It is an absolute cracker. Before we hit the road, though, in the Kia, we're going to find out about another car that is truly wonderful. It's Volvo's XC60.
Now, the XC60, of course, is, say, your mid-size premium SUV from Volvo, competes with the likes of the Audi Q5, the BMW X3, yep, and, of course, the Mercedes-Benz GLC. Now, I've been lucky enough to have this car for a couple of days. You're only in it a few minutes. What are your first thoughts?
Oh, I love it. It's got that lovely Volvo feel about it. And I talk about the recent Volvo feel.
Yeah.
Beautiful controls, that big iPad-sized screen that's vertical rather than horizontal. So it gives you just a nice, relatable interchange with current position on the maps,
yep,
your radio, iPhone, fuel consumption. It's handy to do. I see you've notched up 10.7 litres per 100 kilometres. Not bad in a car this size.
Might have something to do with some very short city trips.
Oh, yes, and a certain lead foot on the right there. Yes.
But look, you can flick this way, of course. Yes. You've got your digital radio there.
Right.
The car will read your messages. It'll tell, yep, you about your driver performance. I'm, yes, not sure I want to press that button.
No.
Oh, look, it says driver performance excellent.
Excellent. Yeah, so. Oh, yes. Where does it say that again, Chris?
And then if you duck through to the swipe again to the left, no, yep, it's not Tinder, swipe to the left, and oh, this...
I don't even know about that, I'm afraid.
There you can control your lane keep assist, yep, your distance alert, your cross-traffic alert, all those sorts of things.
All right, park assist, did you give it a crack?
Look, I didn't, but do you want to park?
No. No, I don't trust
those
things.
Are you sure?
Things. No. I'll do it myself, thanks.
Well, I reckon with the amount of research and development money that Volvo now have, thanks to their Chinese owners, Geely, that if it's going to work in any car, it's going to work in this car, because this car is just so brilliantly thought out. And it's a bit like the Jaguar Land Rover story, I think, when Tata came along with all that money and said, here you go, boys, now go and build the car that you've always wanted to. I think the same's happened to Volvo, because the research that's gone into it, you can see that there's been no stone left unturned, and it's just so well thought out. But it's an SUV, but I must say, as soon as I got into the driver's seat, it doesn't feel like you're sitting in an SUV.
No, it doesn't.
You've got a little bit of height, so you've, yes, got that extra vision, but the way it kind of cocoons you, and as you drive around the block here, Pete, you'll notice that the way it handles is something quite extraordinary.
Well, I'm looking forward to this, because remembering that I've had more than a week in the glorious Kia Stinger GT, you know, the fast one, the one,
yeah,
that
the one
I
now have the keys for.
Love, you, yeah, lucky thing. I reluctantly handed those keys over, I can tell you. I'm looking forward to doing a, you know, a back-to-back comparison, because this being an SUV, you wouldn't expect it to be a patch on the other car for handling and so on. But from what you've been saying, it's pretty good.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's not going to be up to the Kia Stinger standard, but when you look at it in comparison to the BMW X3, which, of course, we had just a couple of weeks ago, the Audi Q5 we had just before Christmas, both very accomplished, beautiful, luxurious SUVs.
Yep.
But I think this car takes it to them, and I think it actually beats them, because not only you've got this beautiful, luxurious interior,
this cabin is beautiful,
but the way it drives is, yeah, brilliant. Of course, you've got all that inherent Volvo safety just built into the car. And it's a good-looking machine, too,
it
from the outside.
Is. It's very reminiscent, I think, of the XC90, the, yeah, new XC90.
With its Thor XC90 headlights. Well, it's actually an LED stripe, but it's in the shape of Thor's hammer, which is kind of nice. But just the way they've done this car, I love the way it flies under the radar. People kind of dismiss it a little because it's got the Volvo badge on it. But I think that's at their own peril. If you are in the market for a mid-size SUV with that premium badge,
yep,
you know, you've got to have a look at this. Now, the one they've given us this week is
now
the...
tell us about the engine, all that stuff.
Well, there are a variety of engines that you can get. The T8 is the one that I'm particularly excited about, but haven't driven yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the monster that has the 2-litre turbo 4 plus the electric motors. Does about 50 k's on electricity alone. But when you combine those two motors, you're looking at a power output of about 314 kilowatts.
Oh, that's your kind of
That's
language,
the same as
right
like
there.
A BMW M3.
There you
it's
go.
Nuts.
Yep.
However, the one we've got here is the D5R design, and it's got the 2-litre turbo diesel. Pretty healthy outputs, 173 kilowatts, 480 newton metres. Consumption is suggested here at 5.6 litres per 100
now,
k.
Now, let's go back let's to go yours back to again. That one. 10.8. Well, close. Not.
Well, anyway, yeah. Look, anyway. I'm sure it could be brought down with a more conservative driving style in eco mode. But of course, you do get this fabulous 10-speaker sound system with a digital radio. You've got the fine Nappa leather. a heated front seat as an option in this car, and metallic paint as an option at $1,900.
Yep.
But list price for this particular car, $73,990, as we sit in it, $76,390. Right, not so cheap,
not
but...
not the cheapest car going around.
But would you wouldn't good. Be shopping at it against a Holden Equinox or no, a, you right. know, kind of a RAV4.
Up against an X3 or an Audi Q5.
Or a GLC,
yeah.
In which case it's cheaper than the lot.
Yeah, that's true.
I think they've got a winner on this car, on their hands with this. You know our mates at Wheels awarded it Car of the Year, and I can absolutely understand why it's great. All right, well, we've made it to the Kia Stinger, of course, the obligatory door close. Pretty
wow.
Good, pretty good thump.
Listen to that. It's beautiful build quality, beautiful car. Sorry, I have to declare straight away, I've fallen in love with this car, and that's all there is to it. I love the way it drives. I love the way it looks. We can't actually paint a picture for you on a podcast. However, picture this. It's a kind of cross between a Jaguar. Yep, there's definitely Audi lines there,
yeah,
as
sure.
well.
Yep.
And also just a teeny bit of BMW from some angles. In other words, it's exceedingly good looking, and when you drive it, you'll realise it's the real deal.
Absolutely, and get a load of this interior too.
Mm.
I love the simplicity of it, like
yep.
this beautiful sort of swathe of leather
yep.
that kind of covers the dashboard there, and the binnacle style little air vents, and
yep.
the simplicity of all the buttons. It really is well designed, but also beautifully put together. Like, I mean, this is a premium car.
Oh, very much a premium car. And of course, they've taken the cue. I'm not sure if it's Peter Schreier, who's the head of the conglomerate.
Design, yeah.
Yep. I'm not sure if it's his doing, because of course he had a background in Germany at Audi and
yep.
elsewhere. But less is more. You know, it's very simple, but it's exceedingly elegant. Oh, it's got buttons that make a noise too, isn't that
it does.
Good?
I can't help myself. I've got to yeah. press buttons.
Well. Yes, that's yeah. right. That's yeah. how you roll. Now, I noticed the first thing you do. See, here's the thing. I have actually... well, I've kind of hogged this car. I know you were meant to have it about...
Understatement of 2018.
About a week ago, and I kept thinking, look, I will give this to Chris.
But
I
I'm
really
busy
will.
Today.
Look, I'm a bit busy today, but look, we'll get there. I love it. But the thing, I noticed the first thing you did, when you got into the car, was switch it from comfort mode to sport mode.
Indeed, and there's a reason for that. So
yes.
I'll put it in comfort mode.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether you can hear it. Be quiet. We'll see if we can get an engine note out of it in comfort mode.
Yep.
Okay. So
yes,
now
refined
we'll flick
and
it,
quiet and
flick
refined.
It to sport mode.
Yep.
And I think it gets a bit angrier.
It does.
Not a huge amount of difference.
Not a huge amount. And the other thing is, you'll notice that in sports mode,
yeah.
it's a lot less comfortable. Now, I like sporting cars. I like going around corners, you know,
yeah.
nicely.
In a spirited fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing wrong with that. And yet, I find that comfort in this car gets you around the corners just as nicely as you want. And also, it is just a bit more comfortable, and the ride isn't quite so harsh.
Yeah, I found that at the launch, I don't know whether you remember, but I was saying that the GT mode, which is the one we're in at the moment,
yep.
Wasn't as compliant, but wasn't as well sorted when it came to the corners as the standard car, the SI version,
yep.
which is considerably cheaper, about 12 grand cheaper.
Yep.
This, of course, has the adaptive suspension, and I just wonder whether... It's just too much going on underneath those wheels.
But, oh, I don't know. It's beautiful.
Look,
I love
it's
it.
Certainly not a bad device by any
oh,
means.
No.
Here, you hold this.
Okay.
I want to go for
now,
a crack
let me just,
the
I'll just tell you, first of all, 3.3-litre petrol, 8-speed automatic. This one's in deep chroma blue, which needs a wash because I've driven it everywhere and I absolutely love it. Oh, and good news, even though this is a lot of money, 60 grand, 60,685 will get you this fabulous car. Let's go.
All right. It is blindingly quick.
Wow. This roundabout came up quite fast, didn't it? Look out. Oh, look out. Miller's driving. Here we go. Wonderful brakes. Fabulous cornering. Oh, this car, I love
it. Jeez, it's planted, though, isn't it? Just the way it squats and gets that power to the ground. The front is completely unflappable, just sitting straight. It's a really rewarding car to drive. Like, it's just... great fun, and God, it's quick. And when you consider, you know, the Commodore SSV, it's now no longer, but the LS3 6.2-litre V8, 0 to 100 in 5.4 seconds. This car, 3.3-litre twin turbo, does 0 to 100 in 4.8 seconds.
There you go.
It's ridiculously quick.
Ridiculously fast. Now, people are saying that it is, in fact, maybe an alternative to the Commodore. And, of course, Kia's hoping it'll take the role of both the locally made Commodore and the Falcon. I tell you what, the imported Commodore is going to have to be exceedingly good to really to equal this one.
Ah, let's see. I don't think it's got a hope, to be perfectly honest. I really don't. I think this is a car that not only will take the place of the Falcon and the Commodore for those type of enthusiasts, but it's going to steal sales from the likes of Infiniti, you know, the Genesis brand. Why would you buy one of those when you could have one of these? It's great. I love this car.
Yes, so do I. Absolutely love it. And another thing about this car, in the week plus that I've had it, thank you, Chris, for letting me have it so long, I've never had more interest from other people. People are just falling out of the trees to just come and have a look at it and talk about it and find out, what's it like? Is it as good as it looks? And of course, there's a lot of interest in this car. I think they'll sell well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're interested in a sedan at all, get to your Kia dealer, text us out. I think it's time to turn the mic off and hit this road. What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Lovely.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180kW turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au. Prevention is better than the cure, especially when it comes to replacing damaged headlights. That's why we recommend fitting Altrek skins to car, truck and motorcycle headlights. You've heard us talking about Altrek skins as a great way of protecting your car's paintwork. Well, it actually works just as well on your headlights. Simply trim to shape and apply. Pick up a roll at your local auto parts store or order online now at altrex.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yeah, special edition of Behind the Wheel this week with Peter Hitchener missing in action. It was a good opportunity to just take stock of what 2018 has been for us so far. Some big news comes from the Greens and their suggestion that basically all combustion engines should be withdrawn from sale by the year 2030 in Australia, following the lead of the likes of China and India and parts of, I think, well, Paris has banned diesel cars at least, and there's bans in Britain and all the rest of it. Anyway, it's obviously the way of the future. The question is, will Australia be left behind because of our backward-thinking governments who don't really seem to have the guts to do anything substantial? That's my editorial piece for the day.
I was going to say, there's the editorial, friends.
Yes.
It's up and about.
Yes, Mr. Frydenberg, if you're listening. But what we will do is take someone who's logical, sensible and clever, and he's the man behind the Electrical Vehicle Council, or the Electric Vehicle Council. It's Behad Jeffrey. Behad, welcome back to Behind the Wheel, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's a great pleasure. Now, it seems that 2030 is the time when many governments are calling for all combustion engine cars to be removed from sale. Any idea why 2030 is the timetable?
Well, I'll tell you what, the most important thing, whether it's 2030, some other countries like the UK and France have said 2040, whichever one of those years it is, the most important part of this is to have a plan in place. Because the world's told us this is the direction that we're taking. With 100% certainty, we're going to ban the sale of petrol and diesel vehicles by whatever year. This is the way that we're moving. And Australia so far hasn't had a plan. We've sort of just been letting it happen off in the background. Our market hasn't really been growing. And in the meantime, we've got investors, we've got people, you know, bringing vehicles to our market here and saying, well, what's going on? Are you guys aware what's happening in the rest of the world? Are you going to come up to speed or not? And so really picking a date, whichever date it is, the most important part is to say that, yeah, we recognise it. We know that there are benefits attached to it, and we want to make sure that we're a part of it and not being left behind.
What sort of infrastructure changes will need to be implemented before this is feasible?
Well, one part of that is importantly ensuring that we're integrating it to the infrastructure that we've got. So whether that's our roads or our electricity infrastructure, all the answers are there. So the technology exists to make sure that it's a benefit to our grid and not a hindrance to our grid. But that requires a level of coordination on recognising that these cars are coming, that the more electricity demand is coming, and we have to have a plan in place for it. But then importantly as well, actually building out charging infrastructure. So places where in everyone's homes, at workplaces, supermarkets, and particularly along regional routes, you can charge your cars as well. That's an area that I think private investment is very strong. There's, you know, we get more calls than for any other reason for people wanting to build charging infrastructure. What they're really looking for is that certainty of, does Australia have its act together on this issue? Are you going to move in this direction like everyone else is? Or should we just put you on the back burner while we go pour our money into other countries overseas who seem to have a plan in place?
And now I've been reading about some improvements in battery, in fact, dramatic improvements in battery technology, which would take us away from the lithium-ion product into
proton batteries.
Yeah, from something.
What is it RMIT doing? Yes, it's amazing. Yeah.
It's in here in Melbourne, and it seems amazing. Now, I know that would mean quicker charging, incredibly fast charging. Will they change the dynamic of motoring for electric car users?
Well, what I'd say is there are a few advances coming and that have been being made in really big step changes in what batteries can do and how batteries are made. But you really hit on it there. The key is that it came out of Australia, and very often it is coming out of Australia. We're the people that have the expertise. We're the ones that parts of the world look to say, you're making all the inventions in this area, and, by the way, you have all the raw minerals that we need to build the batteries in the first place as well. So it is. There's a bit of a mismatch there for the international community to say, you guys actually have quite a lot of leadership in this area, but you're not doing anything about it to actually build your market, to build your economy off the back of it. You're inventing things, and we're making all the money off of it. So that question is, proton batteries, very exciting new development that's been made. Again, another one, this time out of Melbourne. Again, another one out of Australia. The question is, what comes next? Are we actually going to commercialize it? Are we going to use those batteries to power our vehicles as opposed to importing oil from overseas and using that?
Good question. Good question. What about the hydrogen fuel cell vehicles that seem to be also on the horizon at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're still seeing a lot of research and development going into making hydrogen fuel cell, both the vehicles and the fuel itself, more efficient. And we are seeing that get cheaper. So it's looking like it'll be a sort of quite viable, quite strong alternative coming up. Really, the question for us, though, is we see that today already there's about a 2% global average in the market share for new electric vehicles. So around 2% of people are buying electric vehicles. In Australia, we're at 0.1%. Yeah. So the question for us is, any time that there's a new technology that we can get behind, what's our opportunity to do it given we're already so far behind the one that the rest of the world's already moved on?
Yeah.
So there's a fair bit of catching up we've got to do, and then we can look at those big leadership opportunities and say, you know what, let's go chase those ones.
Yeah. The reason that we only see such small uptake here in Australia, is that to do with the fact that, I suppose, at the moment, right at this sort of time, electric cars are expensive. There's not a lot of choice. But there's also plenty of countries that put subsidies in place to encourage consumers to get into electric vehicles. Is that our downfall?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So what we're seeing is countries are looking at the technology and saying, look, it's getting cheaper every year and more powerful every year. And projections are now somewhere around 2022, we expect to see battery electric vehicle cost less to make than an internal combustion engine. So those countries are saying, well, how do we get ourselves ready so that when that point comes, we have infrastructure, we've got the services, we've done the coordination piece, so that then we suddenly skyrocket up in the amount of electric vehicles that we sell. And so they're taking that action now, whereas the conditions are appropriate here in Australia. In fact, we make quite a lot of good electricity here as well, but we're not doing anything to prepare ourselves for it. We're sort of, at the moment, have taken let's wait and see. Hopefully it'll eventually land on our shores and we'll get some of the benefits as well, but that's just not good enough for a country like us.
Yeah, fair enough. A lot of talk about EVs. Like, personally, I love them because they're spectacular to drive. But, the main driver a lot comes from environmental groups saying, they're better. They obviously, emit a whole lot less carbon dioxide. We heard some Liberal backbenchers through the week talking about the production process of electric cars and the fact that, places like Victoria are still so reliant on things like brown coal. In your view, and I know you do come from the Electric Vehicle Council,
sure,
but it's fair to say they genuinely are a better environmental option, aren't they, than a combustion engine car?
Well, they are. And I think the first thing to recognise is that the car itself is zero emissions. It's not producing any emissions. The question is, well, how are you powering it? What electricity sources are you powering it from? And funnily enough, it's usually the same politicians who sit there and say, solar panels can read our thoughts and we should all wear, you know, tinfoil hats to protect ourselves against them. But then turn around and say,
you mean you're not wearing yours?
Renewable energy. Turns out we've got a lot of coal power in this country. And you go, well, hang on a second, that's because of things that you're doing. You're the government, you're in charge of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, we do need to do better in, you know, having more renewable energy, more clean energy, producing our electricity. But also we can shift across from, you know, the other reality is that a petrol car is 100% fossil fuel powered. And that's on our roads at the moment. So it's much better than the alternative.
Yeah, no, fair enough too. Yeah. Now, you obviously being head of the Electric Vehicle Council, probably get more insights than the rest of us. And as I mentioned just previously, electric cars are brilliant to drive, particularly the ones that come out of the Tesla factory. But we've got some really exciting stuff on the way. Nissan and their all-new Leaf's about to hit. The Renault Zoe already. We're going to see a whole raft of models from
Audi,
Porsche,
Z-tron and
Audi and BMW.
Hyundai Range, yeah.
Hyundai, exactly, the new Kona. Is there anything that you might have been privy to over the last 6 months that we may not know about and that you're excited about when it comes to driving?
Yeah, look, in terms of, I've gotten a chance, I guess, to drive most of them that are coming out, and you're dead right. I think the first thing people usually think, well, we've got a country full of rev heads who love driving cars, so will they appreciate electric cars? And so, well, get in one and drive it, and you'll see for yourself.
Exactly.
Feeling when you tap an accelerator and the car actually moves right away.
Yep.
That takes a bit of getting used to it.
And you almost
get much more powerful drive.
Get whiplash too when you accelerate too hard.
That's exactly right. But look, it's certainly for each of those cars, you know, cars like the I-Pace being in the Jaguar I-Pace,
course,
being another great performance vehicle coming out. Okay, much like the rest of the car market, it's about what do you want out of your car? You know, do you want an economic family car to get you around, and cars like the Nissan Leaf and Hyundai Kona coming out doing that? You want, you know, a beautiful sports car like the Tesla or the Jaguar. Really, cars, and there's the important part for the electric vehicle industry, they have cars to suit every need, right across every range, and that's what it's starting to feel now. It's not just the higher end of the market or, you know, just the sort of oddly shaped, particularly environmental cars. It is really cars for everyone.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, tell us just a little bit about the Electric Vehicle Council. Obviously, your role is to kind of try and get more of them on the road, but are you a sort of a service for the public to get more info if people are curious?
Yeah, people should absolutely reach out to us. We're on at theelectricvehiclecouncil.com.au. Most of our work is so we're funded by companies in Australia who are basically companies seeing everyone else in the world is making this change and we're not. Why not? Particularly important for us when you look at every time a country gets ahead of us in electric vehicles, that means that their businesses and their consumers are paying less than a quarter of the price of transport than we are here in Australia, so they want to make sure they don't miss out as well. So we're there to, you know, speak to governments, self-informed companies, and also certainly very happy to speak to the public and provide them with information too.
Excellent. Well, we're huge supporters of your work and what you're doing.
Yeah,
looks like you're making some inroads, so good on you. Don't be a stranger. Come back and visit us again soon on Behind the Wheel. Behad Jafari, head of the Electric Vehicle Council. Great to chat to you again, man.
Yeah, you guys as well. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks.
Headlights are so much better than they used to be. But there is one downside to today's plastic headlight lenses. They go all cloudy, dull, and sometimes even an off-yellow colour. Not only does this bring down the look of your car, these less than perfect lenses aren't giving you the beam strength and clarity that your headlights were designed to. There is a simple fix, however, and it doesn't involve getting new headlights. It's the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit. It's really simple to use, it works great, and clear headlights are just a few minutes away. Search for the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit in the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au.
Havel's just released a new family 7-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180kW turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.